Hi, good afternoon, good evening.
Good night.
So I'm laughing already because I've got crazy, crazy funny comedians on the show tonight. So this is Noreen Sumter. It's Tuesday. And like I always say, Tuesday is my favorite day of the week. Why? Because I get to get on the radio and talk about things that interest me, with the hopes that they interest you. So tonight I have on Beyond Potential Live Life Your Way, I have two people that are actually living life their way and creating it the way they want to. Not that many of us don't, but they really are taking themselves on. So we have Dara Jamot and we have Bill.
Wrong.
See, he's staring at me. We have Brad Bruckner.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
And you're not Bill.
No, not tonight. I'll be Bill later. Okay.
Dara,
hi, Noreen. How are you?
I am good. So I'm really grateful that you guys are on the show. I'm
so happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
It's incredible. Absolutely. In this beautiful studio with the hot tub. It's nice.
With the hot tub. Oh, that's the part you can't see. He started already. So tonight we're talking about passion. We're talking about people living their own way, like live life your way, which is my tag, if you remember, Brad. Brad and I met at BNI, Business Networking International, where we used to go every week on Wednesday. I know your mouth is getting ready to say something.
No, it was very early Wednesday. Remember
yes,
that?
Yes, it was 7 a.m. We'd right. have to be there. And we'd be there every Wednesday. For how long did you join?
Oh, I lasted a good 2 or 3 weeks.
No, you didn't. You were there longer than that. You were there, what, maybe 4 or 5 months?
It seemed much longer.
Well, actually. I've been there for 3 years.
Well, congratulations.
I know, right? Yeah. 3 years. I never thought I'd be able to do that, but I'm doing it. I'm still doing it. And Dara and I met on the SELP at Landmark Education.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
And that was what? 12 weeks.
Yeah.
That was 12 weeks of rigorous engagement
with ourselves.
And we also had people that we had to coach and help them transform and pull forward their dreams and desires or whatever the goals they were creating for themselves.
Yeah. I'm actually still in contact with a few of them.
Oh, you are? Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm in contact with like one or two of them for myself. Yeah.
Yeah. I just went to go support one the other day. They were having something in Jersey City.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I went out there to support.
You have to be a little careful with rigorous engagement with yourself, don't you?
What do you mean by that?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, it was rigorous. I mean, it was 7 a.m. between you and I, and then it was from what, 6 to...
How did I get involved?
6 to, like, 10? 11.
6 sometimes, to 11?
Yeah, we'd get out of there like 10:30, 10:45 sometimes.
Right, so we'd have to be on time, and if we showed up late, we had to...
Restore our integrity,
and it's like... But you know what? It really does. It worked, and it has helped me to this day in like being on time and
absolutely
and restoring my integrity when I don't. And it's very frustrating when people don't restore their integrity or don't show up on time and like waste your time. So that was really a good course for me. So anyway, tonight I want to talk about your lives. Like, so you are both comedians, right?
Correct.
And tell me, look, can we start laughing? All right. So tell me a little bit. I want to know, what had you guys choose comedy, or did it choose you?
Brad, would you like to go first?
Or? No, come on. Ladies first.
Oh, thank you. I actually never thought that I would pursue comedy. Mm-hmm. I actually had a bad experience with a comedian, Prom Night. I'm not going to say I was heckling, but I probably was because I was 17 and just like ridiculous. But he was like, "You look like you have breast cancer of the back." And I was like, "Comedians are awful people, you know, screw them or whatever."
Breast cancer of the... Oh!
Yeah.
It's got pretty, it.
Yeah. I wish I remembered that dude's name now. But he said that to me. So I was always like, "Comedians are bad people, whatever." And then I went on this, and that was years ago. And then about 4 years ago, I was on a date, and this dude, we were passing Grizzly Pear, and someone was barking outside. And the dude was doing a pretty good job with, like, our date so far. We were going to Mamoon's to get a falafel, and I was very excited about it. And the guy was like, come in to see the comedy show. And I was like, no, we're going to get food, like, priorities here. He said, no, 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 you can eat inside. I was like, oh, cool. But if I come back, I'm getting on stage. And then my date turns around and says, no, she's not. She's not funny. And the rage inside of me, I was like, I was like, and thank God I was in a course at Landmark, because I was like, I'm going to create something out of this. I was like, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian, show you how funny I am.
Right.
And then that kind of sparked the journey. So, yeah, bad date is how I got into comedy.
Bad date.
But I appreciate him, so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
For me, complete opposite. Yeah. So the first book I ever read when I was 4 or 5 was Henny Youngman's One-Liners.
Mm-hmm.
My whole life, I was obsessed with comedy. I would watch The Tonight Show way before I was really supposed to. I followed all the old comedians. I kept reading more books. I read books by Jon Stewart. Repressed all that. Never thought I had a chance. Grew up in Texas, and it wasn't really available. Moved to New York.
Why wasn't it available in Texas?
Because it was something like in New York, it's everywhere. There's networks of comedians. There's only a couple clubs at the time. Now there's more. But right. So anyway, long story short, 3 years ago, I'm talking to a business coach, and I'm wondering how to get off the hamster wheel that we sometimes all get on, where you feel like you're going, you know, in the same place. And she said, why don't you do more things for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So she said, what do you like? And one of the hundreds of things I like was comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, why don't you take a comedy workshop just to get started? The person who taught Jon Stewart, one of his teachers, was offering a class a week right next door to my office the next day. And it's the first thing I signed up for. You know, I didn't check with my wife. I'm just like, I'm doing this. And then from that point on, 3 plus years later, with a ton of I don't even know how many performances and producing shows and doing shows, not just in New York, but Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania.
Virginia.
Virginia, Pennsylvania, same thing.
Oh, is it?
Is it?
Is it?
I don't know if people from Pennsylvania or Virginia would
take
like
it
that.
Back. Mm-hmm. Different places.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I had a question. So do you realize this is the first time I've ever actually heard you tell a story straight?
Yeah. Well, comedy for comedians is a serious topic.
Right. I'm like I'm in shock that you actually are being serious, because I'm so used to you know, kidding around and having a giggle.
Well, let's start talking, you know, let's get off the serious topic of comedy, and then we can laugh.
No, we're here to talk about your life as a comedian. So that's really, really great. So let me just pick up what you put down. So you used to study comedy as a little kid, right? Watching shows that you weren't supposed to
watch. I was a class clown. I got in trouble a lot. I always kind of broke the rules. Nothing bad. No official prison time. But
that was absolutely me too.
Yeah.
That was absolutely me too.
Yeah.
So that's why I knew instantly that I would not sit next to you if I were in school, because I would have been in serious trouble.
Correct.
And you too.
I was always in trouble. I had to learn how to not get in trouble.
And what kind of trouble was it?
Oh, I mean, I would just crack jokes. In kindergarten, I wouldn't let the kids take nap time. I would just want to play and just like entertain all the time. And I'd have to go outside and have a personal recess by myself. Like, they set that up as a structure for
personal
me.
Recess.
We call those timeouts, right?
Well, I mean, timeout isn't too bad when you're, like, painting and playing outside in the grass with balls by yourself. You know, it's not that bad.
Oh, it was, okay.
Yeah.
But you preferred?
Preferred? What do you mean?
What did you prefer? Like, being in the classroom playing?
No, I just want to, I mean, I was dance. I started dancing when I was 3, you know? So, like, the idea of entertaining and, like, doing things to just kind of, like, be doing that. I don't remember whatever that looks like. I've always been doing that, you know. Like, I was thinking about the other day how for Mother's Day I put on like a magic show, you know, and it was just like I've always just wanted to bring kind of like smile and joys. And most of the time it got me in trouble in class because it wasn't the appropriate time. I can't tell you how many times I got put into detention because I said something out loud that I thought was funny but completely inappropriate and lacks great timing. So comedy has been great in learning how to actually do that when you don't, like, you know, offend people without purpose and reason. Because I would just talk, and I would just whatever. If I thought it was funny, I would say it.
So on your report cards, what was the most?
Dara is smart but unfocused. Dara should stop
Talking.
Dara should stop bothering the other kids.
Distracting.
Dara's there. Yeah, definitely distracting.
Yeah, those were my things. So it was like, Noreen should stop talking. Noreen's very distracting. Even got kicked out of, like, I went to college at 16 in England, and I got kicked out of college, very nicely, mind you, by the dean or the headmaster, I called him, because I was distracting.
Uh-huh.
But he said, Noreen, maybe you should go and look for a job. And I was like, why? He says, because I think you'd be really good at it. And there I am. I'm like, okay. So that's how I went out. That's how he kicked me out of school.
Oh, wow. That was very polite. That was a very nice way of doing it.
I remember a teacher actually saying, I would come in late or I would act out. And I actually remember her saying, you're never going to make it. And that was also kind of like you. That was like, yeah, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
You need those moments. Yeah. They're helpful.
Right.
You're never going to make it.
Right.
And you said...
I said, you're wrong. And no, I didn't. I think I said, yeah, you're probably right. No.
You're probably right. Okay. So you're on the stage your first time. Tell us about what happened to you when you got on the stage during that date. What was that like?
Oh, I didn't get on stage.
You didn't get on the stage?
No. I actually didn't get on stage. The comics were doing crowd work.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd work is like when you're just working off the audience and mm-hmm. you're just asking them questions and kind of just making up material on the spot based mm-hmm. on what they say. Or maybe you have something in your pocket based on whatever. But their crowd work wasn't really working. Now, I can say I was not heckling.
Right.
They were asking me questions, but my responses were funnier than their punchlines.
Right.
And when the host of the show is laughing harder at something that I said than what the comedian on stage said, then therein lies a problem. You know,
right.
It's just like, ooh, this is kind of bad. So then my date turns to me. He's like, oh, you actually are funny. I'm like, I don't need you to
validate.
Tell me that. I know that. But now you get to see just how funny I am.
Right.
So, yeah, I actually didn't get on stage that night. I ended up going to a mic a few weeks later and just vomit whatever I thought was funny. And then I ended up 2 years later taking a class at Comic Strip, and that made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was able to create and curate a set and curate what it is that I want to say on stage,
right,
rather than just being like, this is funny.
All right. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday, 9 to 10 Eastern Time, and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential. Live life your way on talkradio.nyc.
Do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or itchpreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo woo!
What's that?
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is Noreen Sumter, and we're back with Adara Jamot.
Hey.
And Brad Bruckner.
That was a great break, by the way. I really enjoyed that. Those couple minutes off were really nice. Sort of like a vacation.
Really?
Yeah.
But you
I feel like I kind of went Bahamas
we are on
and
vacation.
Back.
Look at this. Look,
there you
oh, yeah.
go. You
yeah, but
right
they can't
you.
See this. We're on the radio.
Yeah, you can. Look.
Oh, yeah.
There's a fish.
There's a big
coral,
fish behind us.
Water. Oh.
Right. See, this is what I have to deal with when I have you have comedians on the line, and it's the word exemplary. No, I want to say that this is how they probably behaved in school, right? Mm-hmm. So they were coming back on a vacation, and there's the fish. They find everything to like engage with, right?
Sort of. Yeah.
So tell
more people, less fish.
Right. So yeah. I want you to tell me, like, what was your first time like on stage?
Oh, on stage.
When in front of people, not a class, but you actually got on stage. What was that like?
Well, I'm in front of people all the time because of work, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing, the paying job. Mm-hmm. But first time on stage was awesome. Actually, I had a very different experience than most because it was at the world famous comic strip and also it was a class show, but it was packed. Mm-hmm. Right. And because it was a class show, you have kind of people there that are sympathetic because it's your first time and they're excited that it's your first time. So it actually went really well. Everyone's like, oh, I can't believe he's funny. Surprised a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But what was kind of cool is I realized what was funny is when I got to kind of be myself and not so much the material. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I've tried to work on ever since then.
Right. So now I just want to touch on the being myself part, because a lot of people, you know, being yourself is really important, because I always say you got to be yourself because nobody else is coming. And there, you know, just nobody else is coming. Right. And everybody else is taken. So you have to be yourself. And the more confident you are in being yourself, I think the greater your light will actually shine or does shine. Right. Mm-hmm. So you were going to share a story about your grandfather.
Oh, yeah. After the week after that whole date situation, mm-hmm. we were going to go see my grandfather, his birthday. And it was like a tradition. We'd always go down there. And I was like, well, let me tell my family I'm going to ruin my life and pursue stand-up comedy.
What did they want you to do?
Oh, I mean, I've been working in corporate America as a product developer. So mm-hmm. For 14 years, that's what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm. I still didn't get my underwear.
I didn't give anyone underwear. Why would I give another woman underwear? This is why I never understood why people think that I would give anyone else
underwear.
You gonna show me what it looked like? I mean, like what? Like what? What benefit do I have out of giving you underwear, Noreen Sumter? Why?
She went to Victoria's Secrets.
Oh, that type of product.
Sorry. For 6 years, I never got to say that out loud to anyone, and it all just came out.
You guys
right
are
now.
Babbling about underwear. I have no idea why, and all of a sudden now we learn.
Okay, so yeah, I was working corporate America, so I was already on the journey of what my family wanted me to do. So so I'm telling them I'm kind of shifting gears from that. So anyway,
you ever said grandfather and underwear in the same story?
Probably. My grandfather was a G.
Oh.
So
OG.
Yeah. Original gangster?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he was a lady killer, so I'm sure I said underwear in the same. I'm sure I said worse adjacent to my grandfather's name. Shout out to you, Grandpa. Rest in peace. But anyway, oh, that ruined the damn story. Okay, so my family ended up being very supportive. Yeah, my family ended up being very supportive in me telling them, and they were like, okay, research this person, like, you know, follow this person. I'm like, all right, cool. Everyone leaves the table. My grandfather says, the great comedians do two things. They make people think and they make people laugh.
Absolutely.
And you are responsible for making them think about what you are making them laugh about, mm-hmm. right? And he's like, now go out and be great and kick ass. And he died a week later. Wow. And I was like, oh man, now I really got to become a comedian. Like, oh, he can't just like drop gems like that. And then I just go back to my cubicle, right? Like, so, so now I have to actually do something to march towards this dream that I've proclaimed that I'm going to do. So.
And what was it like actually getting on stage? How long did it take for you to get on stage?
Well, that conversation happened in June. I didn't get on stage again. And actually, no, I started on a show, but it was like a show that I helped bark, and it was like in the back of a restaurant. There were like seven people there. Mm-hmm. And I flailed my way through that. I mean, I spoke about my grandfather and how the two women in the front were safe now because he was dead. And I talked about whatever came to mind, and I would never want to listen to that tape because I'm sure it's
But you,
awful.
You know, like, I'm just going to say that, like, I did comedy twice. I did two open mics, and the first one I did, they actually invited me back. Mm. But I just talked about like my week, right? Because mm-hmm. the guy that invited me, he talked about his daytime or his calendar, and I was like, is that it? You know, so then I talked about my week and I got laughs and they invited me back. And I went back. And while I was there, after at the end of the show, we were all talking to each other. And one of the comedians punched me in the stomach with his elbow.
What?
Because he didn't get any laughs. And then there I am getting laughs.
So he punched you in the stomach like a third grader?
Yeah, he punched me in the stomach. He kind of went like that. Right, and punched me in the stomach. I was
That's
like,
weird.
Ooh.
You know, but, one thing I was going to say, one thing I find about comedy that I love is every comedian I've ever met has been extremely supportive of other comedians. I don't see anyone like trying to put someone down or trying. Everyone seems to be supportive and helpful, and it's great. Like, and there's a really good camaraderie. It doesn't mean that we're not competitive. Like, you know, like
it's a combat.
But it does. But it's that's one part I've always enjoyed. It's just like the backstage stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think it's important to find your tribe, because a lot of times people come to comedy and their journey is like skewed another way because they're around people and they kind of like, this is what comedy is supposed to look like, and it's not, you know. I think if you find a circle that's supportive, and that, you know, at least wants you to do better.
Right.
If they see that drive and that passion and people, you know, people that you can, who are going to call you and be like, hey, like, come to this mic with me, work this out with me. Is there a tag that I can do? But it's important to find that tribe, because if you find yourself in a circle that isn't working to your benefit, then it's going to steer your journey on a whole different course.
So thank you for that. You hear that? Steer your journey. Find your tribe. Every community, no matter what you do, you have to find your tribe.
Absolutely.
Have we frozen, you said?
Mm-hmm. Find your tribe. Find your...
We're back.
Unfrozen.
We're unfrozen. Yeah. Okay. So on the outside, we were talking about that comedy is addictive.
Yeah.
But I think anything that like, I'm addicted to coaching. I love coaching. I love helping people solve problems and things, right? So tell me a little bit about that, like the addiction.
Addiction. You get, for me and for you too, a little bit, right? there's an adrenaline rush that I've never experienced. And it's not just from the audience reaction. Mm-hmm. It's just knowing that you kind of get into a tunnel vision and you know, it's regardless of what's happening in the crowd, but when you know that they're fully engaged and that they're kind of with you and everyone's acting as one, it's like there's no better feeling, and it can last. It's lasted with me for like almost 3 or 4 days, and then of course, then all of a sudden you're like, where is it? I need it again.
Right.
And then if you go up and you have a bad night, which happens, and actually I was going to say, I think that you know, you were talking about the first time on stage, but I think the first time you fail on stage is the real moment when you kind of have a different type of realization.
Tell me what that's like.
Oh, well, as high as the high is, that low, that'll sit with you for like a month and a half, as opposed to 4 days. First time it happened, I beat myself up. Like, what could I have done better? And then you kind of realize, well, sometimes it's just the way things go. You can't control that. Just like you can't always. I've had a bad performance and had everybody laughing.
Right. And why would that be a bad performance?
It's just like everything in life, right? And that's kind of what I think I like about comedy, is that there's just things that happen and you can't control those things. The things that you can't control are how well you're focused on stage. And so eventually I think you kind of learn that it's okay if people may not be laughing, because as long as you're doing your best, then the rest doesn't matter.
Have you ever been heckled really badly on stage?
Yes.
What was that like? What was it like the first
time? Being heckled is great. And the reason why is because that means that audience member is engaged. Now, if it goes so bad that they don't stop and you can't get into your flow, then they're... stage time is precious, and if they're wasting your stage time because the focus becomes on them and not you, and even if you're dealing with them, that becomes your set, and that can only be, you know, so good. So you kind of feel like they're wasting your time.
So I believe that there's no such thing as failure. I think that failure is just failure is a failure to perform, right? So you didn't perform, but like what you can actually learn in that experience where you said you fell, does that help you to recreate and start again?
No.
It doesn't.
No, I'm kidding. Sure. Oh. Of course. That's how you get better, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think failure is like you're really bad and you shouldn't ever get up there again. Or I failed, my life is over.
Right. No. See what I mean? This got so serious for comedians. Like, this is a serious. Let's try it. I feel like we should be funny.
Oh, I love this.
My whole experience is that a good comedian is extremely smart, right? Because he has to be able to take day-to-day situations and see the funny side of him. Or like just share himself in a way that, you know, it's real, because you're actually dealing with a lot of real issues sometimes in comedy that people take so seriously, it gives them no freedom. But when
I don't know if we're all smart or just hyper observant.
I think a good portion of you are smart and hyper observant.
Uh-huh. I feel like I have it all.
Okay, then you have it all. So you're extremely funny.
Well, so far, I don't think anybody's going to believe that. But on occasion, you know, it depends.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the question that Bill asked? Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the question? There was something I just asked you the question and it just went right out of my head. He stole it. What was the question? The question was, oh, yeah. Tell me about your failure on stage. Oh, your experience of...
Well, yeah, I have a similar thought process to how you feel about failure. So it's just what happened and what didn't happen, and just put in what's missing next time. So I've never really had a heckler that I didn't feel like I could control. And there have been times where it's like, oh, yeah, that set did not work. But it just, that's all it is. It didn't work. Right. I didn't go home and have the sense of like, I'm not funny or I shouldn't do this. It was just like, that didn't work. So what about this didn't work and why it didn't work? Mm-hmm. And how can I make sure that I do whatever I need to do so that next time it doesn't go like that? Right. You know, I think just like putting the variables all in a row, understanding, you know, what... where we went wrong is just the most important thing, and not making it personal on me or my personal talents.
Right. So, okay. Thank you for that. So I have this thing that every week when I do a show, I always bump into something that I don't realize that I've bumped into it until I'm actually in an interview with somebody. So I watched the Jim Carrey and what was the guy? Latka. What was his name again? Andy Kaufman. So Jim Carrey did the movie where he's playing Andy Kaufman, and he literally, you know, embodied Andy Kaufman, right? And so my question is that what I find is that what I've experienced is a lot of comedians end up in an overdose or killing themselves. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Is that the lowest low? Is that the depression? Is that they're not funny? What is that that has them commit suicide like that? What do you know? What do you know?
That and more when we come back.
we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
If you have an interest in marijuana, you want to know about marijuana, law, policy, and culture, then feel free to join me, Joseph A. Bondi, every Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning on my show, In the Know 420 on TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place, because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.myc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, and we're back. This is Noreen Sumter, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And today we're talking to comedians and we're discussing their passions, like how they got into comedy. We're discussing the innards of what it is to be in the comedian or comedy sect. Is that what I call that? The comedy tribe, comedy sect, or be a comedian. Simple. Yes. So
I think before we left, Noreen wanted to bring down the show with talking about how comedians can be completely depressed and suicidal. Great topic for two people who are supposed to be funny. And that's a really hard one to make funny, right?
No, it's not. I think it's a really important question because you talked about the highest highs and the lowest lows. Like when you you get really high with all this adrenaline because people are cheering you on, laughing at your jokes, you'll be in the center of attention, right? And then all of a sudden it doesn't work out and you get a low. So I wanted to hear about that because so many comedians have died or killed, or entertainers for that matter.
Well, okay, I'll just jump in.
Sure.
Tag me in. There we go. Got it. All right. So I can't speak to anyone else's experience, but I will say personally for me, I know what it's like to really be in like a dark place and not know, you know, what things are going to look like and, you know, just being in your head too much. Just, you know, I know what that looks like. And for me, as a comedian, I enjoy being able to take people out of that space, even if it's for a moment in time. And I think that, you know, yeah, you do have that moment on stage, but you still have to go home and be with yourself, you know? So comedy is a great escape. But if you still have things in your head that you're dealing with that are undealt with, then there's no amount of comedy that you can do that can fix that.
Right. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, comedy in itself for me, and I think for a lot of other comedians, is therapeutic.
Right.
Almost all my material is somewhat personal with a half truth or full truth. And so you're kind of getting it out in the open and your audience becomes your therapist. That being said, you know, I've experienced lows with just like we all have, but, and comedy is one way I get myself out of it. I've always used laughter to deal with issues in the news or deal with issues that seem tough to deal with.
Right. And you're the same way, right? You feel that way. But yeah. I also feel that, like, so in this show, what there is people always think like you become like instantly famous. They don't realize it takes work in any area of your life to grow yourself in your craft, right? So can you tell me a little bit about like that? What is it that you want to create for yourself in your life as a comedian? And do you want this to take the place as become your number one job? Is that something that you're working towards?
Absolutely.
Go ahead. You want to say more about that?
Oh, no, I'm just going to leave it at absolutely. No. I mean, this is what I want to do full time. Right. You know, I want to get to the point where it's paying my bills and more, you know. Mm-hmm. And it could look like branching out into different things. Mm-hmm. But I at the end of the day, want to be that like 80-year-old woman on stage telling jokes.
Mm-hmm. So you want this to be your life?
Yeah.
Okay.
Forms of entertainment I want to be my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I have to balance it a little bit more because I have three kids and a wife. And if I started going on the road and really devoting full time to comedy, it would be it could be detrimental to things that I care more about.
Yeah, I have a cat. She's cool with it.
So that leads me to the question, what would you tell your 20-year-old self? I mean, like, what are you, 10 years out of 20?
Yeah. Yes, I am 10 years out of 20.
What would you tell your 20-year-old self?
What would I tell her? Write more things down.
Say more about that.
Because there are so many things that happened in my 20s, but because of recreational activities, I don't remember all of them. And I would like to draw on those stories right now. So I wish I kept a better journal in my 20s.
Uh-huh.
And I often think about like, oh man, it would have been great if you had started comedy in your 20s. But I don't think I had a lot to say then, you know. I think it would have been more of the just like, blah, 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 this is funny, you know. Right. And now that I'm a woman of a certain age, I'm 30 fine. I have a better idea of what it is that I want to say. So, yeah, I mean, look, Dara in her 20s had a lot of fun. I just wish she wrote more things down.
I would have, for me personally, I would have grown my hair like crazy long, like Twisted Sister. Had I known like that this was going to go, I'm bald for those that can't see, but had I known it was going to go in this direction, I really would have taken full advantage of hair when I had hair. Mm-hmm. And even if it, you know, kept me out of a few places. But yeah, I really regret not growing hair when I had it.
So you always kept it short?
But
I saw pictures with hair. You had a lot of hair.
My nickname was Hair.
Really?
Really.
So yes. What's your nickname now?
No hair. No. It depends on who you ask.
Maybe if you rub it with some peppermint oil, it might come back.
Might shoot some sprouts.
Listen, I've tried lots of stuff. It's not coming back.
Have you tried peppermint oil, though?
No, but I've come to terms. Look, I am who I am, and I've come to terms with the fact that I'm going to go through life without hair, and I'm fine with it. They always come up to me. They're like, you know, you look better without hair. And I'm like, no, I actually looked great with hair. This is not the best me, but this is what I have to deal with. This is who I am.
So I have to tell this quick story. Like, so last year I bought myself some wigs because I thought it was easier than getting a hat, right? So I had all these like long wigs, right? Lace front wigs. And so I'd wear them to our BNI. And so now get this. I can understand a black man telling me, you know, that's not working, the wig, get rid of it, go back to your natural hair. But a white guy or white guy saying to me, that's not working, we like your natural hair, that kind of freaked me out a little bit. It was kind of exciting, actually, because I didn't think that white guys knew that when black girls were wearing wigs or not. I really did not know that, because I have a lot of black girlfriends who wear wigs and date white guys, and I don't know if these guys know if it's a wig or not.
I mean, Noreen, it wasn't a black white thing, to be honest. One day with one set of hair, then the next day you came in with like completely different hair. That's not a black white thing. That's just noticing that. Look, I knew you weren't a blonde. Is all I'm saying.
That's hilarious.
No, but it's funny because you knew it, right? Some people ask. And literally asked me, did you change your hair? Oh, did you straighten your hair?
Look,
and I'm like wondering, how can my hair go? I mean, my hair, when you pull it that, it's pretty long. But how can my hair go from this to down here?
Yeah.
Look, right? I've been married for 17 years. If my wife comes home and she's done anything to her hair, I better freaking notice, right?
Right.
If it's a haircut, I better say, but you got to go, beautiful haircut is the best I've ever seen, right? You come in with like a completely different thing, I'm going to notice, and I got news for you, so did pretty much everybody else. It wasn't like, I don't know what that thing was, but it sort of was like maybe a pet on your head or
so. So every week I would come in, right? I only wore it for like the winter time because it was cold. Mm-hmm. And I figured, let me try this on just to see how it goes. And so I was like this, like this.
I like how she's like, he's so attuned to the black community.
You are so stupid. And so, so he was like, Noreen, I hate that thing on your head. So, you know, I guess that's probably why. Anyway.
Incredible for a white guy.
I know. It was just
so observant.
So groundbreaking.
Observant. Yeah, that's why you're a comedian.
You're a pioneer in society.
Because you're hyper-observant.
Hypersensitive.
Yes, right. Hyper-observant. So, anyway. Does anybody online have any questions that they'd like to ask my two guests in the studio? You could type it in. Until that point, we'll just continue talking.
You better hurry because the phones are ringing off the wall.
They are. You just can't hear them.
The light board is lighting up like crazy. Hold on. I think it's a call from my dad.
Shut up. So anyway, so tell me, what do you want for your future? Like in comedy, what do you want? Considering
other than hair,
and other than the fact that you do have a family and you still want to pursue your dreams.
So look, we would all, you know, love to be on a movie or a TV series or Fallon or, you know, selling out Madison.
What's Fallon? Oh, Fallon.
Yeah, Jimmy. Or selling out Jimmy Fallon.
Yes, I got
to the Tonight Show.
Yes,
Selling out Madison Square Garden.
But what is it going to take to do? What would it take to actually do something like that?
Well, hard work,
mm-hmm.
Knowing the right people.
Mm-hmm.
Always, you got to. It's like dating.
Tell me about that.
About dating? No, if you don't put yourself out there, right? You always have to be out there. It's always, you got to. I treat comedy like a business. It's networking. It's making sure whoever is staying for the length of the show, mm-hmm. making sure you meet the other comedians, mm-hmm. making sure that you're on time, making sure that you don't go over your over the time allowed on stage.
Okay. And,
yes, correct. Being mm-hmm. respectful to others.
Good.
So all those things, maybe if we continue to do the right thing, it'll pay dividends. If not, just going to have a really good time doing this.
Exactly. So it's something that regardless of how it goes, you're enjoying it, you're loving it, and it's just something that you're going to keep on pursuing.
Look, there's so many people that would love to play professional football, right? Mm-hmm. But they can't just go on into Giant Stadium while professional athletes are on the field and start playing with them. Right. As comedians, we get to go on the biggest stages with professional, well, we are professional comedians, but with comedians that are
tenured.
A lot more well-known or famous mm-hmm. and play on their same stage with them. And so what's better than that? It's like living a real life fantasy.
Right. Dara?
Yeah, I remember when I first started and people were like, well, how much money are you making from that? And it's like, I would do this for free for the rest of my life. I'm not.
Right.
But I would.
But that's the question that they would ask. That's the question that measures whether you're really into something.
Absolutely.
If this is something, would you do this for free if you didn't have to have bills?
Well, that wasn't the question that they were asking. That's how the resolve I had to come to.
Yes.
Where it was like, well, why is it so important to people how much money I make? Like, and especially if you're not going to be helping me pay the bills, if I'm not making as much money as I right. need to be making. But that's when I realized how important it was to me mm-hmm. because the question was just so inconsequential. It was like, well, why is that of importance? You know, like I got up every day and went to a job that I was like about
right.
for some money.
Right.
And I'm much happier not being in that cubicle.
Right.
So how much money I'm making to go do something that I love is for me a silly question. So yeah, I don't know. I think that the end game is important. You should know where you want to go. I think it's about showing up for that next show and being as professional as Brad was talking about, and just making it work for you in that moment. But showing up is the most important. Showing up and how you show up is what's going to take you to the next unforeseen thing.
Right. So did you have something?
We're going to have to take a break soon. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about more showing up.
This is why you have comedians on the show. They just take over. Thank you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to SecretsOfTheSire.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Sure.
So Brad's bringing us back. So welcome.
So are we? We're back?
Yes.
Great. Great timing, Brad. So we're back and we're talking about being awkward mm-hmm. and how we have to relate as people and the general personalities of comedians. And Noreen, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I've always known I was awkward. As a child, they call me freaked out. The kids would call me freaked out.
And how'd that make you feel?
Actually, it didn't make me feel anything because I knew I was a little odd, right? Mm-hmm. I always kind of knew I was a little odd and didn't follow. My father said to me at 13, I've got to march to my own beat. I really didn't know what that actually meant mm-hmm. until I grew up, but I did. I've always done what I wanted to do. That's why my show is called Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. Living life your way is living it your way, not your parents, not your friends, not your community, not the, but actually creating a life that you love and that you want for yourself. And that's why this show is about people coming on and really living their lives. So you are going to talk about barking. Can you explain to us what barking is?
So barking is a, and I don't know that much about it actually, because I haven't done it, but barking is, not that I wouldn't do it, because I think there's something, it's a skill, but barking is where you stand on a corner near a comedy club and you try to get people into the club. And when you get them in, you get in exchange for stage time.
You get more minutes on stage.
Or you get on stage.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dari, you want to say something about that?
I barked for my first show.
Yeah? What was that like?
I mean, I kind of like street harass people anyway, so it was normal.
You normally street harass
people? I don't street harass people, but it's not uncommon for me to have a conversation with a stranger.
That's right.
You know, so yeah, so it was just easy to just yell out again what I thought was funny. Uh-huh. I haven't barked since my first show. But even when I'm outside of my show at Moe's, I'll, you know, when people are walking by, I'm like, hey, comedy show, like, you know, so I guess I'm always naturally barking. I don't know.
Are you the person that talks in the elevator?
No,
oh, absolutely.
I do not like elevator talking.
Oh, you don't?
No.
I love any talking.
We don't have enough time to get into a conversation that I really like want, you know, like, hey, no, elevators are weird.
It's perfect for me.
For me too. Because sometimes it's just a very quick conversation. I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago when I was at Google and I was having a conversation with my friend and this guy. I said, are you listening to our conversation, you nosy Parker? And he goes, it sounds really interesting. So when we got downstairs, he goes, it sounds really interesting. I said, would you like to come? It was an event I was going to. And he goes, yeah. I said, give me your information. And he did. He showed up. 2 seconds. All that's right. Why they call it an elevator pitch. It's what, 60 seconds, 45 seconds? And that's why you practice in an elevator. I've done my elevator pitch in an elevator.
Nice. Maybe I also haven't been in an elevator in a really long time.
Well, you're not in corporate anymore.
That's right, baby. The trains are free.
So tell me, what would you say to somebody that says, Mommy, when I grow up, I want to be a comedian?
No, don't.
Why?
I'd say don't. Unless you really, because we it's hard freaking work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in being on, and unless you really have the stomach for it, it's a tough thing. And there isn't money. It's a job we do because we love it. It's not a job we do for the money. I don't know if you feel the same, but
historically, I think I might have felt the same, but I think that today we live in a world where you can kind of create your own content. You can create things.
Mm-hmm. I was talking about that outside. We were talking about that young lady, Issa. Is it Issa?
Issa Rae?
Who completely created
her own show. So, you know,
I told you she'd know.
I would not want to say to a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old, don't do that, like, later on in life. I would say, write something. Yeah, write something now. Like, what would you say on stage? Or encourage them and maybe do improv, because that's a tool that would help them during their entire life, you know? At least, like, when I said that I wanted to do certain things to my parents, they would at least entertain and engage me until I figured out that that's not what I wanted to
do.
But
I'm a parent of three, and it's kind of fun to crush their dreams early on.
My parents didn't do that. So it's like, if I wanted to play the cello, I was playing the cello. If I wanted to go horseback riding, my father took me to the Staple. You know what I mean? So it's like, I was always encouraged to do the things that I wanted to do. The cello didn't last long. I got scared by a horse. You know, I got tired of the ballet teacher telling me to tuck in my butt.
But you
know what I mean? So I went to African dance later, and then I stopped that, and then I went to jazz. So it was just like, I was always encouraged to do the things that I wanted to do, and they had naturally let me say, like, nah, this ain't it.
I will say it.
But I don't have any babies, so I'm not a parent.
Yeah,
but
that's what I was going to say.
I could only do what...
You can do.
I could only do what the mirror in front of me was held, and I'd like to amplify my
I will say, other than comedy, my African dance class was also the hardest thing I've ever done.
What they do?
I'm sure of
it. They're trying to push your butt out?
Yeah. Yeah, and you're like, oh, I can't stick my butt out this far.
I didn't have the right wig, I guess. I don't know.
It would have came off if you were doing it right.
You know what's so funny? It's funny you should say that, because I went to ballet classes in England on the other side of the world, and the same story was tuck your butt in.
Yeah.
It ain't going anywhere.
It's not going in.
It's not going in.
Stop telling me to tuck my butt in.
Exactly.
It's not happening. I'm 3 years old and I can I just can't do it.
So yeah. You would say yes because you don't have any children. If you had children.
I'm saying yes to my children. Like, I mean, I get that you're, you know, but if my parents did that.
Right,
oh, my God. My kids are in every freaking thing ever. Like karate. They're in it. They're baseball. They're in it. They're basketball. They're in it. Whatever they've ever wanted. Same thing. I'm only kind of half kidding.
He's being a comedian.
It is fun to sort of, you know, build them up and then bring them back down. And no, I'm kidding.
So what other questions?
I coach basketball. I'm sure you guys wouldn't have guessed that. But whatever I can't actually do, I coach people in.
Oh, right? Good.
I'm actually a sex coach.
So what would you... do you guys... Okay, then. We'll leave that one alone.
See how we can just make things awkward that instantly?
You can. Go ahead. Yeah. So tell us about your sex coaching.
Well, I'm probably the best coach. Yeah.
Enough. So
I'm like the Dr. Ruth of... no, I'm only kidding.
No.
Love her.
Doctor, is she still alive?
I don't know
if she's alive.
Della Reese died.
I know, just recently, huh? Yeah. She was a really good comedian.
Yeah.
She was in everything, actually.
Yeah, she was like...
Are we still on?
Yeah, we're talking about...
Are you
about
guys just having a conversation?
Della Reese. Do you know Della Reese?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's usually what happens when... You don't know
you guys
something,
want to talk
then the
about
conversation
underwear
happens.
Again,
you don't know about underwear either?
No.
Let them hang.
I just want to ask, so what would you like to promote? Do you have any guys have anything that you'd want to share with the audience?
Oh, yeah. I have, I'm just going to share it all.
Okay, go ahead. Knock it out.
Okay. I have, for comedians out there, I have a mic. Uh-huh. If you want to give your talents a shot, or if you're already a vet and you know what you're doing, whatever. There's a mic I have every Wednesday at Brooklyn House of Comedy. Mm-hmm. That starts at 7, and then I have a show at Moe's in Fort Greene in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. That's Wednesday at 9, and then
I'm usually beat by that time because I've been up since 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and then I have a burlesque comedy show. That's
tell me about that
burlesque comedy. I don't do the burlesque, but I host.
She covers
it
up.
Yeah, I don't do the burlesque, but I do like a costume change and a sexy outfit. Mm-hmm. But it's so much fun. It's really like an artistic experience. We take burlesque, we take comedy, we take artists. There's body painting. It's in this little speakeasy in the Lower East Side. It's super cute. And it's so empowering. I don't know, to watch the burlesque dancers just do their thing and just own the crowd unapologetically, sexy and beautiful. It's like, it's inspiring. So I really enjoy that. That's monthly. And I host it generally, but I'm doing a set and I'll be doing new material. So I'm like, super excited about that. And then I am headlining at Broadway Comedy Club December 17th. So I'm super
There's nothing excited. Shy about you, is there?
I mean, not really. Sometimes I'm very introverted and I get really weird, but...
When's that?
Wednesdays at 2 o'clock.
That's when you get introverted? Mm-hmm. Wednesdays at 2?
I'd then love to see that.
And then I crawl back out around 5:45. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Got it. Mm-hmm. Brad, is there anything you'd like to promote?
Oh, how much time do we have left?
Go ahead.
3 minutes. I need like 3 hours. Anyway, Yonkers Comedy Club, December 7th. Amazing show. Uh-huh. Limited seating available. But plenty of tickets right now. Only $15. And Brian Scott McFadden is headlining. Mike Racine is on the show. I'm on the show. I'll be hosting that show. A few other great comedians. Mm-hmm. I highly encourage anybody who feels like driving to Yonkers or anyone in Westchester to go to that show. January 9th is our Comedy 10601 in White Plains, mm-hmm. which is always an amazing show. I will be, we'll end with that.
Okay.
I have Mike Rensine's pasta sauce in my refrigerator right now. Actually, I still have your second bottle, Mike. Holler at me. I meant to get that back to you.
Oh, I've actually seen his pasta sauce.
You've seen his pasta? Have you had it yet?
No, I've never tried his pasta sauce, but I look forward to maybe December 7th.
Hit him up. Tell him to bring some bottles to that show.
December 7th, you'll be able to try Mike Racine's pasta sauce.
That's a plug. You're welcome.
All right, cool. So we have 2 minutes. Anything else that you would like to share with the people before we leave?
Well, I got to tell you, amazing experience being here. The studio, like I said, is incredible. I've had so much fun, and I thank you for this opportunity. We've had some laughs. We've made it a little depressing.
It's not depressing. It's real. Dara?
Mm-hmm.
Just don't choke yourself.
Yeah.
We'll just say you were drinking and kick you down the stairs.
I almost choked on my tea. No, this has been great. Thank you for having us. It was really nice meeting you, Brad. And
yeah, finally. We've been Facebook friends for like 27 years.
I know. Because actually, I think when I was starting comedy, she told me to reach out to you.
And yes, right. I did.
And we connected. And here we are.
And full circle. Full circle. Thank you for having us on here. And yeah, I guess if Dara Jamont on Facebook and Chocolate Gem with a J on Instagram.
That's right.
The last plug
I
have.
You want to do a shout out? Brad Bruckner?
No, bradbruckner.com.
All right, great. So first of all, I just want to thank you guys for coming on the show. And I completely forgot that I connected you in the past.
Yeah, so I just remembered
that
now.
Just want to say thank you so much, Brad, for coming on the show. And Dara, thank you very much for coming on the show. And thank you guys for listening out there in Radio Land. And look forward to seeing you next week. We'll be having jazz. People all about jazz coming on the show.
Jazz.
So
jazz.
Bye. Jazz hands.
Jazz.
Bye. This is Doreen Sumter signing off from Beyond Potential. Live life your way. Jazz hands. Come on, Brad. Do jazz hands.
Not doing it.
Do jazz hands.
Not doing it.
Bye.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo!
What's that?
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on talkingalternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff, like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place, because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.